Dr. Gordon Cable is a specialist in aerospace medicine, a senior aviation medical officer for both the Defence Force and the Royal Australian Air Force, and currently head of aerospace medicine training at the RAF Institute of Aviation Medicine. Gordon is also the founding chair of the Space Life Sciences Committee and works tirelessly each year on top of his usual workload to convene our annual Humans in Space Bioastronautics course. He's a fellow of the Australasian College of Aerospace Medicine, the Aerospace Medical Association, the Royal Aeronautical Society, the International Academy of Aviation and Space Medicine. Additionally, he's a clinical associate professor at the School of Medicine at the University of Adelaide and a senior lecturer at the University of Tasmania. In 2005, he was appointed a member of the Order of Australia for his contributions in the area of aerospace medicine. His professional interests are in altitude physiology of hypoxia and hyperbaric decompression illness, hypoxia awareness training for military and civilian air crews, that's lack of oxygen for anyone who's not familiar with the word, and postgraduate education in aerospace medicine for many medical professionals, where he's a mentor for myself and many, many of my colleagues. Gordon will be speaking about the effects of the space environment on the human body.
I'd like to start with a question, though. This is a question for you guys. When did humans first reach the moon? What year did we do that? Can we call out? 67? Got a 67? Any further thoughts? Reaching the moon. So most people, when you ask that question, what do you think they would say? With the 50th anniversary this year, right? So Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong's first foot on the moon, one giant leap for mankind. We first reached the moon in 1959. It was Lunik 2. It was a Russian probe. But which one does everyone remember? The human mission. Because you frequently hear the question, why do we bother sending humans to space? Why do we go to the moon? We heard a lot about robotics and mining in the last session. Why do we need humans to go at all when we have these autonomous systems and these robots that can do it for us? And I think I just answered that question, because people remember the human exploration aspects, and it's part of our nature to be explorers and to ask what's over the next hill and to send humans, because there is nothing that beats that human experiential actually being there. But it is challenging. So I want to ask you the question, then, how can we survive on the moon? If we choose to go, how do we survive? And there are a number of challenges involved in that. I'm going to touch on a few of them, and my colleagues in the panel are going to mention a number of these challenges as well as we go through this session. But NASA defines the biggest challenges they see in deep space exploration as those. So altered gravity fields, isolation and confinement, hostile closed environments, the distances that we are now looking at, and radiation, deep space radiation. This is going to be different now if we go to the moon and if we go beyond the moon to Mars. We've been locked in low Earth orbit now since Apollo. We haven't really left low Earth orbit. That environment is entirely different once we go beyond the magnetosphere of the Earth and we are suddenly in deep space and we're faced with planetary exploration of these other bodies. So I'm going to touch on some of these issues. One of the most challenging things NASA and ESA and other agencies have to face is to try and work out how we protect humans from radiation. The radiation in space is far different to what we experience on the surface of this planet and what astronauts experience on the ISS in low Earth orbit. They have some protection there. They're actually not completely out of the atmosphere, interestingly. They're in the thermosphere of the atmosphere. They're within the Earth's magnetic field, which protects them. They get more radiation than Earth, but it's not as bad as deep space. Earth is an unusual situation. We live in a bunker. The entire universe is bathed in radiation. That's the normal situation. We're the exception. We live in this shielded bunker, and as soon as we leave that shielded bunker, we are suddenly exposed to radiation from the sun in greater amounts than what we experience here because of our atmosphere and magnetic field. And there's galactic cosmic radiation, which comes from energized gas clouds and supernova explosions throughout the galaxy that spews out radiation ionized particles at very high energy, high velocity. So it's a very different environment and very challenging for human physiology to cope with all of that. From the moon's perspective, we're going to be exposed primarily to more radiation from the sun, which comes at us at fairly low velocity, but in high flux. So they tend to be positively charged protons, alpha particles, which are essentially a helium nucleus, and there's this constant background solar wind, as we call it. But from time to time, there is a solar flare. There is a large solar particle event, which is sufficient radiation to cause acute radiation sickness for astronauts. During the Apollo era, we were very lucky. We missed one of those events by a matter of days or weeks during one of the Apollo missions. The astronauts got home in time. But on the moon, that's going to be a potential problem of exposure. The lucky thing is we have warning time. The exposure takes time to get to us and to the moon. There's sufficient time, hopefully, to get astronauts into a shelter. The galactic cosmic radiation is ubiquitous. It's coming at us from all directions, every direction in space. We are protected to some extent by the planetary shielding effect. So on the moon, we're protected from half of it by the fact we're on a planetary surface. Half the radiation from one direction is shielded by the rock of the moon, which is great. So you'd probably expect to see maybe 1.5 to 2 times the radiation exposure that astronauts currently see on the ISS. Partial gravity. Everybody knows that we go to space, we're weightless on the ISS, but that's not true on the moon. We've got 1/6 Earth gravity on the moon, and we really don't have a lot of experience with 1/6 gravity. We have absolutely zero experience with 3/8 gravity, which is what we'll feel on Mars. We have lots and lots of experience with microgravity, and I don't say zero G because there's no such thing as no gravity. In that constant free-fall environment of the ISS, you're in a microgravity environment, and we've done a lot of research on how that affects your physiology. But how many people have walked on the moon in history? You know? 12. 12 humans have been in 1/6 gravity in the entirety of human history. And they were only there for a few days. It was a camping trip compared to what we're currently contemplating, seriously. So we need to learn a lot more about what that actually means, how we deal with it. Gravity affects humans in very, very serious ways. It affects our blood pressure. It affects the way that our reflexes work to maintain blood pressure. It affects the way our heart pumps blood around the body because the heart deconditions if it doesn't have to work so hard. The fluids shift around. Getting to the moon's a 3-day trip, but going to Mars is going to be 7 months of microgravity. And one of the biggest problems we're facing at the moment, and we think it's a gravity problem, is that astronauts' eyes and their eyesight deteriorate in microgravity, and it's a permanent change when they come back to Earth. It doesn't recover. They end up with nearsightedness. It's like the presbyopia you get with age where you can't read the fine print. And there's a lot of research going on at the moment to try and work out how we fix that, and we don't really know whether that's going to be a problem in lunar gravity. Hopefully not. I think, as they say, some gravity is better than no gravity. But the other problem is bones and muscles. Muscles waste away, they atrophy. In microgravity and in partial gravity, similarly, we don't have to lift as much. We're not loaded as much. Our anti-gravity muscles don't have to work as hard, so they don't bother. They just waste away. Bones demineralize. Calcium washes out of bones, and we end up with a condition very similar to what we see in patients on Earth with osteoporosis. The bone demineralization, the calcium washes out, the bones get thinner, and once astronauts return to Earth, it does take months and months sometimes to recover the normal bone architecture. Now, the best way to fix this is exercise. And at the moment, astronauts exercise for 2 hours a day, every day, on the ISS to maintain healthy bones and healthy muscles and healthy hearts. And it's a great countermeasure. It works really well. But you know what? We don't know what to prescribe in terms of exercise in a 1/6 gravity environment because we have no experience with that. So there's a lot of work going on in how we exercise, even how we locomote about the planet. We don't know how we're going to effectively move about on the planetary surface. The big problem is gravity transitions. If you're in microgravity for a long time and then you come back to even a partial gravity field, it's very difficult to walk, it's difficult to see, you feel dizzy, you feel motion sick, your blood pressure may not be quite so good, and it takes a few days to recover from that. For the moon, this may not be such a big issue, 3 days, so what? But Mars, 7 months, there is a high likelihood that astronauts will need to live in the lander as a habitat for probably 3 or 4 days to get their Mars legs before they adapt from a balance and posture point of view until they get their cardiovascular reflexes back a little bit, and then they can start ambulating and doing what they need to do. It's the transitions that are the problem. If we went to space and never came home, we'd stay adapted to microgravity and it wouldn't be a problem. But the thing is, we want to bring our astronauts back healthy. Lunar dust is another big problem. You've probably all heard of coal miners' lung, silicosis. There is a problem with lunar dust, we think, from a medical point of view. It's toxic stuff. The Apollo astronauts experienced some of this. You can see the dust stuck on that spacesuit, that EVA suit. It got into the LEM. It caused in some of the astronauts a problem that got called lunar hay fever. It had streaming eyes, coughing, sneezing, these respiratory symptoms, which were probably as a result of this dust, which is very, very fine, like talcum powder, but highly corrosive. There's no weathering forces on the moon. The dust is sharp-angled, corrosive. It erodes seals and mechanical parts. It sticks to solar arrays. It levitates from the lunar surface and sticks to everything because of electrostatic charge. The ionizing radiation bombarding the lunar surface electrostatically charges the dust. It levitates a couple of meters above the surface, sticks to everything. That's going to be a hard problem that we've got to try and mitigate. We're going to need to do some really good occupational medicine in terms of environmental monitoring, biological monitoring, respiratory function testing, monitoring astronauts' lungs to make sure this is not a problem, because potentially it could be a big problem. This stuff, we've known from recent studies, kills cells in cell cultures. So brain cells and lung cells die when exposed to lunar dust. So we have to be very careful about how we mitigate that risk. The other problem is the pressure on the moon. Now, we, you know, on the ISS have pretty much sea level pressure, sea level temperature, sea level oxygen concentration. The only difference with the ISS environment is it's a microgravity environment. It's the gravity that's different. So it's a laboratory for microgravity. On the moon, it's a hard vacuum. There is no atmosphere at all. To do EVA on the moon, you need to be inside your own personal little spaceship. So that EVA suit has to be able to support oxygenation and pressure for human beings. Without oxygen, we become hypoxic, our brains don't work. As pressure decreases, nitrogen bubbles out of our system and we can end up with decompression illness or sickness. And even worse than that, if we're exposed to extremely low pressure, water vapour in the body starts to vaporise and form bubbles in a condition that we call ebullism. So if a suit depressurised like that, you know, on the surface of the moon, if there was a slip, trip, fall, breach of the suit integrity, an astronaut would only literally have a matter of seconds, probably up to a maximum of a minute potentially, based on some research done with accidental exposures to vacuum, before they would succumb and die. So it's a very hostile environment. And we need to also think about how we mitigate the risk of decompression illness, where EVA is going to be very different now. EVA, extravehicular activity, is going to be on a contingency basis. We're doing a lot more of it because we're exploring. On the ISS, it's outside maintaining the station, highly planned, lots of preparation. You only do a few of them. But on the moon and on Mars, we're going to be in and out of a habitat or lander, constantly exploring, mining, constructing, whatever it is that we're doing, which means pressure transitions from habitat to suit back to habitat are going to be frequent and predisposing to decompression illness more than we've ever seen before with EVA activities on the International Space Station. The way to mitigate that is by varying the pressures in the habitat. So currently it is being looked at, for instance, to use what we call exploration atmospheres. So living in an atmosphere which is lower pressure but oxygen enriched, which helps wash nitrogen out of your body, and the transition from a habitat pressure to a suit pressure is a much less traumatic transition. Suits like that, Apollo suit and the ones currently used on the ISS, the pressure in the suit is 4.3 pounds per square inch. On the surface of the planet here, it's 14.7. It's equivalent to about 30,000 feet of altitude, and they're exposed to that altitude for many, many hours during an EVA. Interestingly, on the space station, we have had absolutely zero incidents of decompression illness problems. I contend that when we start ambulating on the surface of a planet where there is much more motion, movement, lifting and work going on, that the risk of that will increase. At the moment, we have no way of treating that on the ISS. So that's a bit of an overview of some of those environmental considerations for lunar operations. Why do we need people on the moon when we have robots with all these risks that are attendant upon it? Well, I think it's because robots need to be maintained. Even if we did purely robotic operations, there will need to be humans there to assist the robots, even if not in great numbers. But apart from that, it's purely the exploration, I think, that's important. We have in our genes, in our DNA, a need to explore, and I think we will continue to do that up to and including the lunar surface, Mars and beyond.